This is Stuart Moxham of Young Marble Giants, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. In sports, there are updates, and updates, there are numbers, and numbers, there are sorrows, in sorrow, there is redemption. This is the news, this is the network, this is the news, this is the network, network, this is the news, this is the news, this is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
This is the
news.
This is the network.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Turn on the news replaces Donald Trump Theater at 3 p.m. Thursdays on WGXC after the inauguration. Picking up bits and pieces of the week's news and dropping them in a fictional radio network with computerized news readers, aggregated reporting, and automated music. Tune in Turn on the News every Thursday at 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of George Spencer of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. The administration of President Joe Biden announced January 26th that states would be receiving 16% more coronavirus vaccine each week. And New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was very happy about that, reacting on MSNBC.
The governor's just had a call organized through the National Governors Association with Jeff Zients, who's counselor to the president, and he heads the COVID-19 task force, Dr. Walensky from the CDC, General Perna. And it is very good news from our point of view, from the governor's point of view. The allocation will go up 16%, but even more importantly, we can count on that allocation for the next 3 weeks. We've been going week to week, and you really can't plan and schedule when you don't know what you're going to get next week.
Even before the national announcement, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan told the Daily Freeman that his county received its largest shipment yet of COVID-19 vaccine this week, 1,500 doses. Ryan said that 400 frontline workers, first responders, and teachers will get doses this week in Kingston's High School's Kate Wilson Fieldhouse, 700 senior citizens will receive shots at pharmacies and houses of worship, and 400 will go to healthcare workers. More vaccines can't come soon enough there, as 64 Ulster County residents have died from coronavirus this month. Quote, "We just cannot allow us to have another month in February that has the same level of loss. We have to act more aggressively," unquote, Ryan said. There were 94 new COVID-19 cases announced January 26th in Ulster County. There were 4 more deaths and 23 new COVID-19 cases in Columbia County and 14 new cases in Greene County January 26th. There were 83 new cases and another death announced January 26th in Rensselaer County, and Albany County reported 150 more cases and 3 more deaths.
Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. The state Senate this week will consider a package of legislation meant to bolster how local elections are managed as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. The Democratic-controlled Senate will advance legislation aimed at expanding absentee ballot access, lowering petition requirements for the 2021 elections, allowing for the remote participation of party designation conferences, as well as protections for residents in nursing and long-term care facilities. The package builds off of statewide efforts to expand ballot access and accommodate social distancing concerns. Statewide officials in 2020 made it easier to access an absentee ballot as a way to reduce the number of people going to polls in person. Local elections will be held this year, and village elections are scheduled for March. Among the measures to be included, allowing voters to request an absentee ballot for village elections if they are concerned with contracting or spreading the coronavirus, and reducing the number of petition signatures needed for designating and nominating petitions, and more. And you can read the full story at nystateofpolitics.com.
Bill Williams is reporting for Columbia Green Media that prompt action by employees at Peckham Industries in Athens stopped the fire before it went out of control January 25th, Athens Fire Chief Wayne Butterworth said. At approximately 2:25 p.m. Monday, January 25th, Greene County 911 sent the Athens and West Athens Lime Street Fire Companies to Peckham Terminal on Union Street after the company reported a liquid asphalt tank was on fire with flames and black smoke showing, Butterworth said. Before firefighters arrived, an alert employee took action and shut down the affected equipment, thereby extinguishing the fire, Butterworth said. The blaze was located in the exhaust system. No injuries occurred during the incident, the chief said. Liquid asphalt cement is a refined petroleum product that gives blacktop its characteristic color, according to the Peckham Industries website. Peckham operates 3 liquid asphalt terminals in Athens, the Bronx, and Bridgeport, Connecticut. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting State Senator James Scopus is leading a group of lawmakers to introduce legislation for the state to fund Wi-Fi access for all people living in state-operated group homes and living facilities. Scopus said it would cost under $1 million per year to fund the program. He unsuccessfully requested that the State Office for People with Developmental Disabilities provide the funding. He said, and I quote, to not provide internet, to be able to talk with on FaceTime or Zoom with loved ones, not to be able to potentially provide the resources necessary for those who are in school to be able to get an education, to not provide internet for telemedicine. A lot of these residents can't get to the doctor's office, end quote. Assemblymember Aileen Gunther, chair of the Committee on Mental Health, said it is, and I quote, absurd, end quote, that the state is not providing free Wi-Fi for their residents. She said, and I quote, some families haven't seen their loved ones in nearly a year, and internet may be their only way of connecting, end quote. Doug Hoovy, president and CEO of Independent Living Incorporated in Newburgh, said he, and I quote, can't think of anything more important than being able to communicate with our families and loved ones, especially during the pandemic. And you can read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Noah Zweifel is reporting for the Altamont Enterprise that a 4.4 megawatt solar farm is likely coming to Thompson's Lake Road in Knox in southern Albany County. Some nearby residents are worried about the value of their property once it is built, as well as the impact the project might have on a nearby resident with cerebral palsy. The project, overseen by RIC Energy, was conditionally approved by the Town Planning Board January 14th. The 22-acre project will require approximately 3 months of construction, beginning in May. Despite the required removal of more than 18 acres of trees, the Planning Board found there would be no significant adverse impacts on land, water quality, community character, and soil erosion, among other things. Al Gage of Whipple Road lives next door to the project site. The solar array will stand 250 feet from his back door and 60 feet from his property line. Quote, this is way too close for comfort, unquote, Gage said. He is especially worried about how the construction will affect the health of his 21-year-old daughter who has cerebral palsy. The Gages are also concerned about their property values, as are other property owners in the area. When granting its initial approval of the solar facility site plan, the Knox Planning Board set a number of conditions. Three must be met for construction to start, and an additional four requirements must be satisfied before the farm can begin operations. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. At its January 12th meeting, the Ichabod Crane Board of Education reviewed the district rollover budget as they prepare to begin work on the 2021-22 school year spending plan. The annual budget vote and school board election is scheduled for May 18th. Superintendent Suzanne Guntlow updated the board on the construction work underway in the high school and middle school buildings. One wing, or pod, of the middle school is now complete, and students have moved into the new classrooms. Work has started on the next pod. The new art rooms in the high school are now being used, and the guidance office is complete. Work has begun on the science wing. And Assistant Superintendent Lucas Christensen provided the board with information about academic intervention necessitated by the high failure rate during the first quarter of the school year. Some students will be putting in additional in-person days at the middle school and high school for help. Christensen also said there would be calls to parents when students are failing. The board will next meet on Tuesday, February 2nd, and you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Tony Dobrowolski is reporting for the Berkshire Eagle that the Berkshire Hills Bancorp has appointed Nitin J. Mathur, president and CEO of the holding company and CEO of Berkshire Bank, the board of directors has announced. Mathur's appointment is effective Friday, January 29th. Sean Gray, who has served as acting CEO since August, will remain with the company as bank president and chief operating officer. Quote, I am humbled and honored to join Berkshire on its 175-year banking journey and to be the first CEO hired from outside the bank since his transformation to a public company in 2000, unquote, Mahatra said in a statement. With 25 years of experience in both community and global banking, Mahatra most recently served as executive vice president of community banking at Webster Bank, headquartered in Waterbury, Connecticut. He was a member of the bank's executive team and led its consumer and business banking businesses. Before joining Webster, Mahatra served more than 13 years at Citigroup. He was chair of the board of the Consumer Bankers Association from 2019 to 2020, and he currently serves on the board of Junior Achievement of Southwest New England. Berkshire Bank maintains locations in Chatham and Hudson. Read more about the story in the Berkshire Eagle.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of snow before 1 p.m., then a slight chance of rain and snow between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. It will be cloudy with a temperature high near 36 degrees. A chance of more snow showers on Wednesday night before 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 23. And on Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 26 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 10 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in WGXC's new Sunday morning schedule with the Reverend Kim Singletary and There's a Bright Side Somewhere every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. That's followed by the teens from Hudson talking about books they've read on Bound by Books after the local news at 9 a.m. And at 10 a.m., there's more teens. The Catskill kids from Clubhouse Radio are on at 10 a.m. with lots of music and talk on your community radio station, WGXC.org, 90.7 FM.
And you are in tune to WGXC, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears, a creative community radio station based in New York's Greene and Columbia counties. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay, for the WGXC Morning Show, a radio magazine program from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday through Friday, Saturdays from 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 a.m., featuring local and regional news and events, national headlines, interviews with community leaders and personalities, weather updates, and more about and for the community. We broadcast from Hudson, Catskill, and Acre, New York. The time is now 18 minutes past 9 o'clock. The current temperature in Hudson, New York is 28 degrees. In the second hour of the show, I will have an interview with WGXC station manager Lynn Sloniker, WGXC programmer, local resident, and activist Alan Skerritt, and Riverkeeper President Paul Gallet about President Biden's executive orders on the environment. And that's all here at 90.7 FM on your radio dial, wavefarm.org/listen, and on the TuneIn and Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we tweet here and there at twitter.com facebook.com/WGXC. Area code 518-697-7400. If you'd like to leave a 3-minute recorded message for broadcast, area code 518-291-9492. info@wgxc.org. And of course, we appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org. Our website, wgxc.org. And one thing I'd like to mention on a snowy morning like this, closings and delays. Come to our website, wgxc.org. Go to the left side of the page and click on Newsroom. And you'll see right at the top of the page, closings and delays as of 7:45 a.m. for Greene and Columbia counties. And we'll start off this first hour with music. We'll start off with soprano saxophonist, band leader, educator, Dave Lieben with his group, the Dave Lieben Group. This is a release on Wailing City Sound. It's called Samsara. And from it, we'll hear the composition Sivad.
no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you. If your heart is in your dreams, no request is too extreme. Dreamers do.
From Ulster County resident singer, composer, record label owner, and host of the Kat Edmondson Show, Kat Edmondson. This is from her release of last year. It's called Dreamers Do, on her own label, Spinneret Records. And from it we heard When You Wish Upon a Star. And if you'd like to learn more about Kat Edmondson in her own words and music, tune in this Sunday at 11 a.m. for my other show, The Jazz Disturbance. I recorded an interview with her, and I will air it on Sunday, January 31st. And we started off the morning of music here on the WGXC Morning Show with the Dave Liebman Group with the release Samsara on Wailing City Records. We heard Sivad. More music ahead here on the show.
This is Eli.
This is Esme.
This is Everett.
We're from Maryville.
This is Bethel.
I'm from Iowa.
You're listening to WGSC.
90.7 FM.
Guam, Catskill, Hudson.
Creative
Community
Radio.
Aí, turma, se liga. Ih, a pegada agora é essa. Vai ficar parado. A pegada agora é essa. Thank you.
little time. So much to do. It's 5 minutes before 10 o'clock. We're getting ready for the top of the hour news. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay, and you are in tune to WGXC, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. And in the second hour, an interview with WGXC station manager Lynn Sloniker, WGXC programmer, local resident, and activist Alan Skerritt, and Riverkeeper President Paul Galley. We'll be talking about President Biden's executive orders on the environment. In the background, we're listening to something from the group calling themselves We Six. The song is, appropriately, January, as this is the last week of the month. The release on Blue Jazz Records is called Vivid Dreams. Before that, from one of Canada's many treasures, vocalist Buffy St. Marie from her 1969 release Illumination, we heard Keeper of the Flame. From trombonist and arranger and, oh, he's really a multi-instrumentalist. His name is Antonio Neves from, where's he from? Brazil, somewhere in Brazil. And he's got a new release out. We heard the title tune, A Pegada, Agora é Esse. And that's going to be released next month on Far Out Recordings. Yeah, and right before that, we heard from pianist Harold Lopez Nusa, the release Te Lo Dije on Mac Avenue Records. And from it, we heard the composition by pianist, oh no, by him, it's his own composition, Tambiando. I think that's his composition. Anywho, from 1973, we heard from the group New York City with I'm Doing Fine Now, self-release release. Pianist Joe Sample started off that set at the bottom of the hour with the release Ashes to Ashes on Warner Brothers Records, and we heard Strike Two. And folks, you can find my playlist. Just find the show on our website, WGXC.org. Find the WGXC Wednesday morning show with the date you heard it, and you'll find it. You'll click on the word. I think the word is text, and you'll find the playlist in a few days after the show. In the meantime, you are in tune to WGXC, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears, serving, who do we serve? Green and Columbia counties in upstate New York, as well as international audiences online. Tune in for local and international transmission art, experimental sound, field recordings, interviews, and symposia, as well as other radiophonic treats originating from the Wavefarm Study Center and the WGXC Acre Studio. Getting ready for the top of the hour news and back to the WGXC Morning Show.
This is Jim Colby from Vox Urbana, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Hi, Laura Kuhn here, director of the John Cage Trust, bringing you a deep dive into the intriguing life and work of Renaissance man John Cage, celebrated composer, poet, philosopher, chess pupil of Marcel Duchamp, life partner of Merce Cunningham, macrobiotic chef, exponent of Zen, visual artist, and avid and pioneering mycologist. Tune in to All Things Cage, 7 p.m. Saturdays beginning January 2nd, for conversations with cage experts and enthusiasts from around the world, right here at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, and via the web at wavefarm.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Galen, Tom, and Echo of Acre, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Aaliyah Snyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Hudson Department of Public Works is currently installing 8 solar-powered crosswalk lights funded by a $100,000 state grant along with $15,000 in city funds. The lights are called Rectangular Rapid Flash Beacons, or RRFBs. Assembly member D.D. Barrett announced the $100,000 Department of Transportation award in February of 2020. Treasurer Heather Campbell said the city contributed $15,000 and the devices were purchased in August. The project was spearheaded by 5th Ward Alderman Dominique Moranti. The beacons are meant to instruct vehicles to yield as they approach crosswalks at locations with no stoplights. When a button is pressed by a pedestrian, lights blink for 20 seconds to gain driver's attention. Moranti said the lights can be customized to remain on for varying amounts of time. 3 of the 8 pairs of lights have been installed, one located on Union Street by the post office, another in front of the elementary school at Harry Howard Avenue and Paddock Place, and a third at 325 Columbia Street, Moranti said. Each location has a unit on both sides of the crosswalk. A 2010 U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Highway Administration study found the installation of yellow rectangular rapid flashing beacons leads to more cars yielding at crosswalks. Moranti said beacon sets are also planned to go up by the high school at 802 Columbia Street, at 717 Warren Street and 7th Street Park, and another on the other side of the park before the railroad track on Columbia Street. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union. State education officials are requesting permission from the federal government to forego state testing this spring in light of the coronavirus pandemic. 2 draft federal waiver requests related to state assessment and accountability requirements are available for public comment. State Education Commissioner Betty A. Rosa and Board of Regents Chancellor Lester W. Young Jr. announced Monday, January 25th, that the draft federal waiver requests related to state assessment and accountability requirements are available for public comment. The waivers can be found online at nysed.gov/ESSA. The department is accepting comments through February 5th. The waiver references the health crisis, which has resulted in many students receiving some or all of their instruction remotely. The first waiver request seeks to waive state testing requirements at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. The second waiver request looks to eliminate the requirement that the state identifies schools for improvement based on 2020-21 school year testing results. Young said, and I quote, "In light of the ongoing pandemic, we have determined that the spring 2021 state assessments cannot be safely, equitably, and fairly administered to students in schools across the state and therefore are seeking these waivers," end quote. The board previously canceled the January Regents exams. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for Columbia Paper. The Ichabod Crane Board of Education held its first meeting of 2021 on January 12th on Zoom with board members, administrators, and the public gathering online. The board has been hosting in-person meetings with an online option for the public for the last few months. The board discussed a number of positive COVID-19 cases increasing in Columbia County. Though a few board members said they preferred to meet in person, they also expressed concerns about the spread and the possibility of exposing staff and administrators to the virus. Board President Matthew Nelson said the board and administration plan to look at options for a hybrid model of meeting that would allow the board to be together while the public would participate remotely. Instruction at the middle and high school levels moved to remote learning this week due to positive COVID-19 cases. Last week, the high school and the entire sixth grade were remote. Superintendent Suzanne Gutlow told the board that even with the high numbers countrywide, and I quote, "We have not seen the spread in the schools," end quote. And later in the meeting, she said, and I quote, "We have not had a case from an exposure in school," end quote. The superintendent said the district has seen a decline in the number of available substitute teachers this year. The shortage creates problems with staffing when teachers must quarantine. Gutlow said that even though the infection rates are high in the capital region and in Columbia County, the area has not been moved into one of the governor's designated zones where in-school testing is required. Currently, Ichabod Crane is not in one of those zones. She said some staff members, including nurses, have received COVID-19 vaccines and teachers could start getting vaccinated, but she noted the County Department of Health was completely overwhelmed last week. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, January 27th. 27 degrees in Smith Corner this morning, 29 degrees in West Athens. Some light snow from yesterday is sticking around, clearing out by 1 p.m. Less than an inch is expected to fall. Temperatures reach 34 by 2 p.m., and that will be the warmest point of the whole week. Overnight, it falls to 22 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry but very windy with a high of 25. Then Friday, it's still dry, temps get down into the single digits, and winds get even stronger than on Thursday with gusts reaching 35 miles per hour. Today's tide schedule is high at 1:54 a.m., low at 8:03 a.m., high again at 1:59 p.m., and low again at 8:56 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:48 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see that for the third day in a row, a stream of solar wind is buffeting Earth's magnetic field. Since it arrived on January 25th, the 500 or so kilometers per second stream has sparked some auroras of varying types around the Arctic Circle. More are expected tonight before it slips out tomorrow. Solar wind speed is currently 549 kilometers per second at 7.6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 23. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Peter Meyer of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Tuned to WGXC, Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears, serving Greene and Columbia counties. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay, and this is the WGXC Morning Show. The time right now is 12 minutes past 10 o'clock. The current temperature in Hudson, New York is 30 degrees. And we're getting ready for an interview, a discussion, really, with Lynn Sloniker, Alan Skerritt, and Paul Gallet. And it's all right here at 90.7 FM on your radio dial, wavefarm.org/listen, and on the TuneIn and Wavefarm radio app on your smartphone. Like to get in touch with us, 518-697-7400, info@wgxc.org, and feedback@wgxc.org. To view our programming schedule, listen to stuff in the archives, learn more about your community radio station, come to our website, wgxc.org. All right, let's get to business. Let's get our guests up and running. I see one, I see two, I see two of my guests. I see you, Paul.
I'm here.
You're here. And let's see, Lynn, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. So we're just waiting on Alan Skerritt. He will be with us momentarily. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us at WGXC. The views expressed are solely those of me and my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of WGXC or Wavefarm. Oh gosh, where do we begin with all this? You know, I thought that with a new administration, we'd all get a news break and, you know, get a little distance from politics. But no way. My guest this morning to talk about such things, WGXC station manager Lynn Sloniker. I have, hello.
Riverkeeper President Paul Gallet. And is that pronounced correctly, Paul?
It sure is, and it's great to be with you guys.
Thanks, yeah. And again, we're waiting for WGXC programmer, local resident, and activist Alan Skerritt. And we will be discussing President Biden's executive orders on the environment. In his first week in office, newly elected President Biden dismantled some of the Trump-era regulations and is making changes fast. As of today, President Biden has signed 17 executive orders, and they are broadly in eight categories: the coronavirus, the economy, immigration, equity, the environment, the census, ethics, and regulations. Just yesterday, he signed executive orders promoting racial equity and to Buy American. On day one, he signed the executive order to put the U.S. back in the game by having us rejoin the Paris Agreement on climate change, fulfilling one of his top campaign promises. Our participation in the Paris Agreement on climate change, an international pact aimed at curbing emissions that cause global warming, ended in 2017 because former President Trump cited it very costly to American taxpayers. On the same day, he signed the executive order to cancel the Keystone XL permit, a, quote, 1,200-mile pipeline system projected to carry 830,000 barrels of heavy crude oil each day from fields in Alberta, Canada, to Nebraska to join an existing pipeline. Ooh, boy. All right. Well, you two, do you feel that President Biden and his administration have prioritized wisely and smartly with these two environmental executive orders? Paul, would you like to start?
Well, we have a whole new day, don't we? And we need to make the most of it. If you remember one thing I say, remember the first, which is we need to make the most of it. You're looking at a White House that has not one, but two climate czars. You've got domestic climate czar Gina McCarthy. You've got international climate czar John Kerry. You've got a promise to reinstate a really aggressive clean power plan. The former president, I don't remember his name anymore, his clean power plan was struck down by the courts. Biden is going to reimpose limitations on methane emissions. Methane's a particularly potent climate gas. You know, we could go on for 20 minutes just on the things he's done out of the gate. But the important thing to say is he's going to have partners. You know, you look at the automakers, and they are ready to work with him to raise auto fuel efficiency standards from 40 miles per gallon to 51 miles per gallon. And frankly, they were willing to do that under President what's-his-name also. But they had that headwind against them. They said they won't be competitive. So we need to figure out how to harness the energies of these brilliant climate czars, these newly empowered automakers, for goodness sake, the people in the economic sector are saying they want to change the way we invest money in the future and what projects we fund. We've got our work cut out for us, but we finally have a little bit of a tailwind when we used to have a hellacious headwind.
Lynn?
Well, how can I top that? No, I think that is so true. I guess my first question, and it's more of a question than a comment, is what will it take to undo the rollbacks and the changes that the previous administration put into effect? Yeah. And what does that mean in terms of time and money?
Yeah. Would you like me to cover that to the extent I know?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I was a regulator with New York State DEC for 10 years, and I am following these things as an environmental lawyer for many more years than that. And in law school, they teach you the answer to every question begins with, it depends. And then you're supposed to tell you what it depends on. It depends upon whether it was an executive order from previous president in which case it can be undone with a stroke of a pen. Or if it is more complicated, like a new regulation, there's this so-called Waters of the United States regulation that the previous administration put in place. You can begin a process of rolling that back and putting proper regulations in place to protect our small streams and tributaries of larger rivers, especially in the West. And the drought situation in Colorado right now, it is also hellacious. I may use that word more this interview. But if you want a really safe Waters of the United States rule, it's going to take 2 years.
Wow. Wow. You know, the way I asked the question about the prioritizing of these two, you know, I think, I mean, already folks are on Biden's heels about the Dakota Pipeline. And, of course, the seven-year issue in Flint, Michigan,
right.
You know, as of now, you know, former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, he's been charged with negligence of duty. They've cited at least 12 deaths and more than 80 people sick, and some children could have a, you know, potential lifelong health issues. So I'm just assuming that this, you know, we're just opening up that can of little tiny worms on this issue. And I guess this is what Biden wanted to start with because, I don't know. Yes.
Lynn, I want to step back.
You can step back in.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
So climate is one of Biden's top three or four issues. And that doesn't mean that the other issues aren't super important. Even at Riverkeeper, even when I was at the Department of Environmental Conservation, I realized, and I continue to realize, housing, public safety, education, social welfare, income inequality, these are huge issues, but COVID, racial justice, the economy, and climate. What's really nice about climate being in the top four is that while there are immediate impacts in California and in Louisiana, all over the damn country, it doesn't seem as urgent as these other issues, and Biden is making it thus, which is welcome.
Yeah. All right, let me ask this question, and it has to deal with relationships and money. We'll start with the money part. You know, as I had said, you know, former President Trump said that, you know, pulling out of the Paris Agreement, you know, was saving us money somehow. And do we know how much money the Keystone XL pipeline brought into the U.S. for investors, or how much in tax dollars, you know, we're being saved by withdrawing from the Paris Agreement? Has there been a number spouted about this? Either one of you know that?
I don't. No.
No.
I can give a slightly different answer.
Okay.
You know that old line about lies, damn lies, and statistics? It's an important question, but here's an even more important question. What opportunity is being missed by focusing on fossil fuels? Why do the car makers want to be responsible for higher gas mileage? They want to be able to sell in an international market. And maybe, just maybe, they also care about greenhouse gas loading. I think it's unfair to say that they don't. If they can make money off more efficient cars, they're going to make it. There is a famous investment group that controls $9 trillion worth of investments known as BlackRock. And the head of BlackRock every year issues a letter as to what's important. And this past year, he said, look, the World Economic Forum says the five biggest threats to the global economy are all environmental. We're getting our heads out of the sand, and we're going to start a process where we try to decarbonize our investments. It's going too slowly. There's a lot of reasons to criticize. But yesterday, he issued a new letter that says, you know, we understand it's going too slowly. We understand that most of our money is in funds that are traded by people who don't give a damn about this issue. We're going to create new funds. We're going to support benchmarking for what decarbonization looks like in the economy. And we're going to start disapproving of corporate executives through shareholder resolutions when the corporate executives aren't moving fast enough, and we require every major corporation we invest in to have a decarbonization plan. Is this greenwashing? Partly. Is this promising? Partly. Is it up to us to make sure that it's more promising than it is greenwashing? Absolutely. We all have a role in this, whether we realize it or not.
Wow. Lynn, any comment to that?
No, I think the BlackRock piece in this is major. I think of all the things that have been raised so far in the very short period of time that Biden has been president, comments on the right, notwithstanding impeachment chatter, but the whole involvement of BlackRock is a big deal to the conservative bloc of voters and pundits, which speaks to their power and their ability to change what we do. And that's, in my opinion, that's a great thing.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, speaking of our two parties, I was reading this article in The Atlantic, and it talked about the 2015 decision to construct the pipeline and how it fit a wedge in between the House Democrats and the Republicans, those protective of the environment and those protective of jobs. The vote, so it was 266 to 153 in favor of the pipeline. Surprisingly to me, 28 House Democrats voted for its construction, including the lone New Yorker, Sean Patrick Maloney from the 18th Congressional District. The two of you, I'll start with you, Lynn. What is your feeling on the actions of local officials' records on the environment?
I can't really speak to specifics, but I can say that I think there have been too many Democrats that have been wooed with the business, this is better for business argument. Also, it speaks to where financing comes from on campaigns. It's very similar to the issues around race and equity, that there's a certain talking point, but what it comes down to is what people actually do in the process of conducting their business. And the environment definitely, and I mean, I don't know Maloney very well. I'm sure Paul can speak to his record much more clearly, but I don't, I think the administration taking the position that they're taking so far is going to push these, you know, quote unquote, good Democrats in the right direction, or at least I hope so.
Yeah. Paul, you want to comment on that?
Let me talk about two Democrats, Sean Patrick Maloney, since he's come up, and Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. Sean Patrick Maloney, just in the last 3 weeks, has been instrumental in getting bills through Congress and signed by the last president, one to ban oil and tanker and barge anchorages on the Hudson, which was a big thing a couple of years ago, and we beat it back at the administrative level, and now there's congressional legislation that Sean Patrick Maloney sponsored. And along with Nydia Velazquez and Adriana Espaillat in the House, he sponsored the Hudson River Climate Change Protection Act, which made it into federal legislation known as the Water Resources Development Act of 2020. And the word of law, it basically says that the Army Corps can no longer just wave at the issue of climate change and sea level rise. Now it has to center sea level rise in its discussions of how to protect coastal communities and center frontline and BIPOC communities in those discussions. How we got that through Congress, it's still a bit of a miracle. We also have to thank Senator Schumer and Gillibrand. So, yeah, a lot of good things from Sean Patrick Maloney. Joe Manchin is a swing vote. For the last 4 years, we've been saying, I wonder what Susan Collins will do, because she's been the swing vote in the Republican caucus. Now it's what will Kristen Sinema in Arizona do, and what will Joe Manchin in West Virginia do? And, you know, Joe Manchin is going to protect coal country. If that means protecting coal burning, he'll do it. The reasons we didn't get climate legislation when Obama had 60 votes in the Senate. Remember that a long time ago. But if you can deliver a just transition to coal country, Joe Manchin will vote for what you need. The president has promised to create a task force on how to create new jobs in these communities, build broadband, funding for health and education. Just transition is essential for both the BIPOC communities that have been disadvantaged through techniques that have been more beneficial to more well-to-do communities or more mainstream communities. And just transition is also important to those who are part of the carbon economy.
Yeah. Folks, the time is now 29 minutes before 11 o'clock, and you are in tune to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. This is the WGXC Morning Show. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay, and I'm being joined by WGXC Station Manager Lynn Sloniker and Riverkeeper President Paul Gallet. We were expecting Alan Skerritt. I don't know if he got lost in the mix here, but he's always welcome. Alan, if you're listening, chime on in. And to follow up with what the three of us just spoke about, you know, the talk about what Biden has done killing jobs, just to quickly say, it looks like the jobs that, and I'm talking about the Keystone XL pipeline, many of those jobs were temporary and were going to be temporary. So there would have been a loss of jobs, but again, they would have been temporary. So when we're talking about job loss and all that, it's not as bad as some on the right have been spouting. All right, now we move on to relationships. I've read that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Alberta, Canada Premier Jason Kenney are none too pleased with the XL pipeline deal being nixed. I've also read the congratulatory wishes from world leaders to President Biden on rejoining the Paris Agreement. Can we say about our global relationships, or what can we say about our global relationships when we talk about the environment? To me, it feels like it's in a shambles right now. John Kerry, the former state secretary under President Obama, is now the climate envoy, and I guess he's going to go make nice with everyone. Yes, Paul?
Oh, listen, they will welcome us back with open arms. They will strew roses at our feet as we walk forward. This is not going to be a closed door. This is going to be the most open door you ever saw. And I'll tell you why. You can't solve the climate crisis without a really engaged America leading not only on our legal framework, but our investment framework, on our technological advancement framework. You know, there is an agency within the federal government that's pretty immune to politics. They just tell you what the stats are, and it's called the Energy Information Agency, and their projection for where we will be under current practices is that by 2050, we will have reduced greenhouse gas loadings by a massive 4%. On the current path we're on. And you know that Biden is talking about getting to 100% carbon neutrality by 2035. Can you imagine how enormous the transition must be to increase the rapidity of our decarbonization by that factor? That's a 25-time increase in a shorter time horizon. You know, whatever Justin Trudeau has to say about the Keystone pipeline, he is dying for us to get back in the game and accelerate on climate, and we will be forgiven in Canada, and we will be applauded if we actually put some moxie behind this idea of getting to 100% clean energy by 2035. And then we have to start working on our transportation network, which is a quarter of our emissions, and that's a bigger challenge.
I just look forward to you know, going back to Montreal and not be fearful of someone spitting on me because I'm an American. Yeah. Lynn, your comment.
No, on our international relationships, I think on the climate and otherwise, you're absolutely right that things are way out of whack. I hope that comes into focus rather quickly. But I guess my question about pipelines is Dakota Access. Paul, I'm wondering, or do you know why Biden hasn't done anything about that particular project yet? And do you think he will?
Paul, did you get that?
I sure did. Apologies for the misplaced mute button. you know, they teach you in law school, never try to answer a question you don't really know the answer to, and I can't read the tea leaves on Dakota XL, but I can take it local because, you know, at Riverkeeper, we really try to be about what's going on locally. And the reason we got those good laws from Congressman Maloney is because of local activism in Ulster, in Orange, all the counties facing the Hudson. Locally, this governor announced in his State of the State address, Governor Cuomo said the era of new fossil fuel projects is over, kaput, done. You know, he's always very colorful the way he puts things. And I think that means that the Danskammer natural gas-fired plant plan to repower that facility rather than retire it is DOA. And I think that the actions of the Department of Public Service are consistent with that because they've said, you explain how you could possibly repower this natural gas-fired plant and stay within our Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act goals of carbon neutrality for power by 2040, and we'll even think about giving you a permit. And Dan Scammon is just going, humana, humana, humana. So locally, we're making some headway against fossil fuels. And of course, there are also the contracts that have been let for offshore wind.
Yeah.
You're right.
I think I can answer a little bit about the Dakota pipeline. But first, it looks like we are being joined by Alan Skerritt. Alan, hold on a minute. We're going to introduce you in just a sec. I just want to follow up on what we were talking about. This is from The Hill, and it reads that the D.C. Federal Appeals Court did not agree with the D.C. Federal District Court's decision that the pipeline should be shut down and left the decision of the pipeline to the United States Army Corps of Engineers. The decision left room for both agency action and additional litigation to potentially shut down the pipeline, leaving its future uncertain. Dun-dun-dun. Okay. Alan Skerritt.
Yes.
Where you been?
I don't know. Outside doing snow stuff. And I missed the call, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, that's all right. Well, you're here with us now, and you can join us as we come to a bit of a close. Right now, this is going to be for Paul. So, Paul, listen up. In 4 years, the Trump administration reversed, revoked, or otherwise rolled back more than 100 environmental rules governing clean air, water, wildlife, and toxic chemicals. Most were carried out by the EPA. At the local level, how can communities find out the status of their water, their air quality, and the soil around them?
Oh, goodness, what a wonderful question to end on. In New York, we are blessed with a whole different ethic when it comes to the environment. And all of the things that Trump did probably hurt us less than almost any other state, except for the climate, which we all share. So we can't get away from the really nefarious impacts of his climate policies any more than somebody can from Micronesia. But we have better policies on investment in water infrastructure. The legislature and the governor in New York in the last 5 years have put $3.5 billion into water infrastructure revitalization for clean drinking water and safe discharge of treated wastewater. And when we find ourselves in a situation where we have a clean Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act that commits us to clean energy by 2040 and full carbon neutrality by 2045 or 2050, what citizens can do is they can make sure that they are on the listservs. You know, Riverkeeper's listserv will tell you how your water quality is at 400 different locations in the Hudson Valley. We'll tell you how much money has been brought from that water investment to communities in the Hudson Valley. It's over $1 billion has been spent on clean water in the last 5 years, thanks to these grants, which are tied to community activism. So is the decision not to have any new anchorages, community activism. And we have got to continue that momentum. Everything good that happens begins at the local level. So please, please get on the listservs of Riverkeeper, Clearwater, Scenic Hudson, Hudson River Watershed Alliance, and take action. That's what I would love to see, because in 4 years, we're going to hope that we made as much progress as we possibly could to not just undo the damage done under the last administration, but really vault forward and get ourselves along the way to a safe climate and safer water.
Okay. And Paul, before we skittle away, we need your information. Let's have the website for Riverkeeper.
Oh my gosh, thank you for that. www, you knew that part, .riverkeeper.org. It's just that simple. Get on our mailing list and get active.
Okay. All right, folks, let's all look at our watches. I can give you about 2 minutes for last comments. Alan, I know you're the last in. I don't know how much you heard, if you heard anything. Do you have anything that you'd like to say?
Only that it's up to the people that represent us in Congress and State Assembly, blah, 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 to get behind, you know, this effort. The other people that are out there representing us, we have to know what their thoughts are. They must share their thoughts and goals with the general public. We talk about these things almost in a vacuum. We know what is, we know what was, we know what needs to be, but we're talking in a vacuum because I don't hear the voices of our politicians.
Yeah.
So whoever we get after, we start with them. Go to the head first, I always say.
Lynn Sloniker.
I would just say that I hope that Paul will come back and talk to us more about local impacts and local advocacy on specific issues. Water quality is a very high concern around here. And the more our listeners can learn about the tools available and what they can do to change things would be very useful and much welcomed.
Paul, it sounds like you're a keeper. You've got the last word. 2 minutes. Go.
Of course I'll come back early and often. You know it's my pleasure to talk about this. This work is important, and there's no excuse for not doing it to the best of our ability. What I'll say in my last 2 minutes is that according to the articles I'm reading, Biden has said that every dollar that he spends in his proposed budget for next year is going to have importance to the climate, and that everything we do on the climate has importance to the budget. He kind of gets what Barry Commoner used to call the first rule of all of this, which is that everything is connected to everything else. A ban on new drilling on national lands, a new climate core, a budget that's climate-centered and climate-focused. These are things that can help bring people along that have been fighting. I believe that there are more people than ever before in both parties who understand the urgency here, more people who make investments of dollars put under their management care are aware of the ability to make money by being sustainable. The sustainable funds did better in 2020 than the just plain vanilla funds. We've got to take advantage of this opportunity to bring more people into the tent and then get a bigger tent and then bring more people into that tent and just keep repeating it over and over again until we have a commonality of interest that's going to actually allow us to defeat the retrograde rump reverse thinkers who are still trying to do climate denial or say we can't afford to do safe climate work.
Wonderful, 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 you three. President of Riverkeeper, Paul Gallet, WGXC programmer, local resident, and activist, Alan Skerritt, and WGXC station manager, Lynn Sloniker. I want to thank you all, and have a good day.
Thank you all. Pleasure to be with you.
Ta-ta.
My apology again.
No problem, Alan. I'll get you later. I'll get you.
Yeah, please do.
Bye.
Come and get me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shop when I talk, I just knock everything down. Stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
This is Miles from Hudson. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. Acre Hudson Catskill.
Stevie Ray Vaughan from 1985. This was recorded at the Capitol Theater in New Jersey. A cut from his Soul to Soul album. And this is from his Soul to Soul tour. Before that, from the group calling themselves Austin John, led by guitarist Austin John, the release called A Better Way Back When, and we heard Listen. Time's a-wasting here. We've got about less than 6 minutes before the top of the hour and the end of the WGXE Morning Show with your host, Cheryl Kay. Up next, it'll be your host, Maria Manhattan, celebrating 5 years of her show, The Hudson Cafe, with the music of Cole Porter. That's from 11 to noon. And at noon, it's the Bedazzled Radio Hour with guest host Jeff Economy. Jeff Economy, who's the host of Snack Point Charlie, he's on today from noon to 2 o'clock. To view more of our broadcast schedule, come to our website, wgxc.org. Go to the left side of the page and click on broadcast schedule. Folks, you are in tune to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. This is the WGXC Morning Show coming to a close. You can hear me again next Wednesday or in between on my other show, The Jazz Disturbance, this Sunday at 11 a.m. And as I said, I have a pre-recorded interview with vocalist Pat Edmondson. She's a local girl. She lives in Ulster County. right, everyone. I am just about out of coffee and just about out of time. Ciao for now. Enjoy the day.
I hope we've all learned something lately about a few things. There's no longer time for any of us to do things like it happened to a few friends of ours over in the mother country, down south, anywhere in the world where people push people down instead of pick them up. We're all here to help each other, love each other, and be brothers and sisters. We've got one chance in this life to get out of here, whether we have to do it over and over or not.